Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup, San Jose Sharks podcast, episode number 126. I am Alex. You should know my voice by now. Here with me as always because, well, quite frankly, unless the Sharks get eliminated, we're not going to lose him. And even if we do, we're just going to get numbers from him. Is Ben. What's up, Ben?
Nighty night.
Yes, and not here with us, unfortunately, is Colin. Now, I know what you're thinking. Do we need to give a wellness check? In terms of Colin, is he okay after that last round of Sharks playoff hockey?
No one's okay, Alex.
Well, the answer is we actually don't know if Colin's okay. We haven't bothered to check, but we're just going to assume that considering the Sharks moved on, he's all right. Speaking of which, I think this podcast, Ben, we got to focus on the first round because quite frankly, what else was going on in the world of hockey other than the first round of the playoffs? For those of you who are just watching hockey playoffs for the first time, you probably noticed a lot of different themes. First of all, you know how it sounds like we know what we're talking about? Not when it comes to the playoffs. No one does. Up is down, left is right, especially this first round across the league. There were upsets aplenty. Even tonight, Carolina Hurricanes surprised the Washington Capitals, which, by the way, we'll talk about a little bit later. Kind of bums me out narrative-wise, but again, we'll talk about it later. You probably noticed, wow, it seems like the refs don't want to call a lot or call things consistently. Also true, but hopefully the thing that you took away was how incredibly awesome the NHL playoffs are. The NHL regular season is fun. And dare I say, and I think you would agree, Ben, the offseason's kind of fun too if you really care about the sport.
But, no, it's not, you liar.
But there, I think it is. But there is nothing.
That's just what the Edmonton Oilers fans tell themselves.
And they're only talking about the draft in their case, Ben. Let's get that clear. But there, in my mind, and I'm not just saying this as someone who is obviously a hockey podcaster, there is no better playoffs. Maybe the World Cup. World Cup's pretty up there for me personally. And I love all playoffs across all the sports. But the NHL playoffs, man, you just never know what's going to happen. There are so many emotional up and downs per game, let alone round. And we definitely saw that across this first round. So if you are only watching the Sharks, let me just tell you right now, you are making a huge mistake because every single one of these series so far has been awesome.
Bonkers.
It's been crazy. And we'll talk about those. But Ben,
I do want to say my two Stanley Cup picks are still alive.
Well, good for you. I got one because I put the Sharks in, which we thought was crazy at the time. Now I'm feeling pretty vindicated.
Well, yeah, I mean, what a crazy first round. Well, no, I mean, given that all the teams I thought were kind of better than the Sharks are out of their way, you never
know. Well, and that's something that that I want to point out because you get to take all the credit from Meyer. I'm going to point out that I said the Sharks, my logic with the Sharks getting to the Cup after not really feeling like the Sharks should get to the Cup was, well, if they get this far or this happens, the path becomes easier or they have more purpose. And actually, I think purpose is a big part of it. But hold on a second. Let's take a step back. Folks, we're not going to go game by game. You either watched it or you didn't. If you didn't, I highly suggest you watch it because, quite frankly, Sharks Vegas rivalry is becoming one of the more entertaining rivalries, I think, in the league. Again, not being biased, these two teams want to slash each other's throats. It's very, very clear. This was a very up and down series. The Sharks started the first game extremely strong. The second game was a little wobbly, and then they got jobbed basically on you know what I think we both agree was a very, very bad and pivotal call with shifted momentum. The next couple of games.
Hold on. Momentum doesn't exist, but it certainly gave Vegas the win.
Yeah. Okay. We'll argue about the purpose in a little bit.
No, I didn't say anything about purpose.
Sorry. We'll argue about momentum, Ben. Then the Sharks kind of had issues kind of showing up a little bit there. There was a lot of controversy about the goaltending specifically. And then, the Sharks just decide to come back. Sharks basically went down 3-1 after winning the first game. And then Jones had a stellar game 6. And then game 7 was one of the craziest and easily most amazing playoff games, I think, in sports, period. Particularly the last 10 minutes to the end of the game.
Yeah.
But there are a lot.
The thing to say about that game flow you're talking about there is not only did the Sharks go down 3-1, but their third loss, it wasn't even competitive.
Vegas
won that game 5-0. And, you know, the goalie play had been wobbly up to that point for sure. Right. And that was the game that Dell came in and wasn't able to really do much either. Right. And the Sharks had never, ever come back to even force a game 7 once down 3-1. So things were bleak as fuck.
Well, and not just that. I mean, if you look at their kind of collapse in the middle of the series, Jones was giving up goals left and right off, almost off the faceoff. Starting faceoff.
Yeah.
The Sharks' defense looked abysmal, which I think was a large part of it. The Sharks basically couldn't figure out who they were. And actually, Ben, this is a question that I really wanted to bring up because it's going to be a question for the next round. I have a lot of people asking me, and I'm sure you have people asking you too. So Sharks good now? And one of the things that's been very difficult about this team all season is that despite their record, despite the amount of points they had at the end of the season, they had some very glaringly obvious holes, which were not, I would say, really addressed. And as a result, you know, last season, Ben, we talked a lot about trying to figure out what the identity of the team was. And then we got Carlson and we just kind of forgot about that conversation a little bit. But here we are again in a situation where, look, that last series, the Sharks were very Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And I don't know about you, but when people would ask me before each game, you think the Sharks are going to win this game? My reaction was always, it depends on which of the two teams shows up. There's either the team that's really, really, really scary good, or there's a team that is abysmally bad. That's kind of not really, to me, my eyeball test. Doesn't really feel like there's a lot of in between. So that being said, based off of the fact that the Sharks advance and play the Colorado Avalanche, what is your confidence level in this hockey club?
Oh boy.
And then we're going to talk about Jones specifically.
I mean, I don't know that you can have confidence for all of the reasons you talked about. I mean, I think the story of the first round was largely which Jones showed up, because Jones kind of letting the team down early in a game seemed to have a profound impact on their defensive structure, the, you know, forwards being out of position, et cetera, the rest of the game. Right. I felt like, no, you know, that showed itself no more than game 4. Yeah, right, where they lost 5-0. And, you know, I was pretty devastated at that point because there was no reason to expect that Super Jones would show up at all.
And mind you, not just... We had an 82-game sample size here. So it wasn't just the fact that he was struggling in the last
struggled all year. Let's be honest.
Right.
There's no reason to expect, you know, and something that seemed pretty clear in the first four games is that, you know, there was some thinking, I think, or wishful thinking among the fan base from the regular season that, you know, Jones is just resting. He'll, you know, playoff Jones will show up. And there'd been no sign of him really, except for perhaps in game one, you know, when the Sharks played a really, really strong game front to back, top to bottom, right?
Yeah.
So there wasn't any reason to expect game 5 would look any more like game 1 than, say, game 4. But weirdly, like, that might have been the best game the Sharks played all series, game 5. You know, not as much. I mean, Jones was good. And also what we saw there, maybe for the first time in a while, was, you know, something you talked about a lot in our group chat, that the defense was collapsing and clearing pucks.
Yeah.
Jones didn't have to be great because the defense wasn't leaving him hanging.
Not just that, by the way, the thing that the Sharks defense did and shifted, which I think is really important to acknowledge, is they started forcing the play to the outside. If you look at the games that the Sharks got blown out in, guys were literally skating through everyone up the middle. Part of that, I think, and I've been saying this all season, again, I'm not in the locker room, but it just seems obvious from the eyeball test, is that some of the defensive roles have been confused, because there were a couple of situations there where they were trapping in front of the net where it looked like, and I'm sorry, I'm going to throw him under the bus a little bit, where like Carlson was trying to stand in the exact same plot of space as whatever defenseman he was paired with. He's not the only one that was doing that. I can just recall that off the top of my head. Once the Sharks figured out not to do that, and once the defense stepped up, Jones's game improved. And I think it's important to note because, you know, there was a really big narrative about Jones, obviously, throughout all of this because of the way he was giving goals. There were a lot of fans who wanted Dell to start. There were a lot of fans.
Yeah, I was among them.
I was too for good reason. And I want to be perfectly clear because there were a lot of really bad takes from people who were really supportive of Jones. Listen, there's nothing wrong with being supportive of a player, especially if he's your favorite player. I totally get it. But it was really weird to see people overly defensive about it because when you looked at the situation, Jones was not playing well, and the defense wasn't playing well in front of him. Either way, he was out of position a lot in quite a few of those goals and a few of those games. So I brought this up, you know, on our Twitter and Facebook. You know, it's okay to be supportive of a player and acknowledge that that player is slumping or just having trouble, needs to adjust.
Yep.
And what we saw was, coincidentally, at the same time that the defense seemingly adjusted,
and Jones also came back.
Of course,
Vlasic came back from injury. And let me say, as somebody who'd been pretty critical of Vlasic throughout the year, you know, he missed some time in the middle of the season, and since he came back, you know, other injuries aside, Vlasic has probably played his best hockey, you know, in the last 30 games, I think, ish all year, and he was just playing key, I think, to that Sharks, you know, bringing everything back together and playing a little bit more like that team we saw in the playoffs, you know, 3 years ago.
Totally agree.
You know, that said, you know, I think that, you know, lots of people were advocating for Dell, and there's no reason to suggest that if with the Sharks playing as defensively sound as they did in game five, that Dell wouldn't have been just as good in that setup. But we'll never know, right? Because DeBoer stuck with Jones, and the result was what we were hoping for. And, you know, game six, the Sharks looked just as solid, more or less. And then, you know, game seven, a little bit more squidgy top to bottom.
Yeah. Well, and I guess part of what I want to point out, too, is just, you know, sometimes you got to take a step back from the narrative and look at reality. And the reality at that point in time was Jones is regularly out of position. Now, if it's whether it was all him or partially the defense, I've been saying all season, I think it's been a combination of both, is a thing. But the other thing that's important to note is that when things turned around, there were a lot of people coming around going, "Ha, told you so." You know, DeBoer knew something. Now, here's what I would say: having faith in a player, great. That, you know, that's obviously important, right? The player needs to believe that you have faith in them. Obviously, it's not good not to.
I think it certainly helps.
I absolutely. But the other thing I want to point out again is the defensive side of the game, for various reasons, adjusted as well. And so I don't want to take credit away from Jones because Jones absolutely turned it on and his positioning completely changed. There were a number of things in his games that if you had asked me if he could change by the next game, I would say, no, it's going to take more time than that. You basically got to relearn what you're doing. But I do think it's important to acknowledge that part of that, again, I think part of the negative was the defense and him having to figure out how to play off of defense that was out of position. The flip side is also, if you take a step back, the defense played better, which allowed him to play better. So it's not one of those situations where, like, you know, Jones just magically became stellar. He definitely did what he needed to do, which he wasn't doing before. For the most part, we will talk about one instance where he didn't. But the fact of the matter is that, like, there are numerous factors and you can't just look at it and go, well, you know, he was just waiting to the last minute to elevate it. That's not how it works.
No, it's voodoo.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any way for us to pinpoint a change in Jones's play that, you know, is like the dividing line between bad Jones and good Jones, aside from obvious positional issues that, you know, not only can we see, but we're being called out by analysts like Martin Baron, after game, I think that was after game three or four, I'm not sure which. And I don't think, because of it, I don't think there's any way to predict what we're going to get in round two. out of
at
Jones.
All. No,
at all. Like, and that's fine. You know, this team can win games where Jones plays bad, and they should have won game two. And Jones played bad in that game. Refs gave that game to them. And they won game seven where Jones wasn't as good as he was in five and six. But Jones was absolutely great, I think, in both five and six. And
yeah,
honestly, the Sharks stole game six. Let's be 100% clear.
Oh, yeah.
They played slow and old all through game six, and pulled it into overtime. And then, you know, Tomas Hertl decided he was going to be, you know, big time after Barkley Goodrow almost became the GOAT, and not greatest of all time GOAT either. Right.
Yeah. The old meaning of GOAT, you mean?
Exactly. Which of course is hilarious and ironic given game seven's ending.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hey, you know what? I heard a great theory about that. And Ben, I think you're going to chuckle with it. One of the biggest problems in this round, and is something that still concerns me moving forward, was the Boers line management. Uh-huh. There were a lot of situations where, you know, Carlson had just come back from missing a truckload of games with a groin injury and was immediately getting, you know, 20, basically 30 minutes a game.
Right.
Multiple games in a row, which is, you know, kind of crazy cakes. Now, DeBoer's philosophy, as he stated in post-game interviews, is very much, you know, in the playoffs, you got to play your best players. I understand that. I don't necessarily disagree, but you also got to balance things out and be realistic. And one of the things that really concerned me about this round and continues to concern me even after the last game was, you know, like Radil came in for game seven and barely played. Now, where I was going with this was someone asked me, do you think that the reason he does that is to save players for overtime? Like, say, Barkley Goodrow.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
Not really.
Nope.
that really hasn't been.
No. Look,
if you've watched him, not at all.
DeBoer's player management is baffling, from playing, you know, make-a-wish kid Michael Haley through the first three games, I think, until he blocked a shot and got hurt.
To be fair, he had a decent first game.
He did have a very – he had a grading on a curve, and we said this last podcast, he had an excellent first game. Yeah. And that curve is drew penalties, didn't take dumb penalties, and, you know, he was playing okay throughout the series. But once he was out, it's undeniable, I think, that fourth line became more dangerous.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Barkley Goodrow's tip goal being one example. Was it Goodrow or Melker? I may be getting it wrong there. One of them had the most beautiful tip that not done by Pavelski, basically. And I thought it was Goodrow in game six, maybe for the tying goal.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, despite the fact that he'd been benched for most of the game, you know, Barkley Goodrow basically skates his way around noted pylon Braden McNabb to end game seven, right? And thanks in some part, at least, to Erik Karlsson's sort of magic of I think looking McNabb away from that pass, right, and kind of freezing him, because you know, Karlsson could have just driven the net there too. By the way, all of this is really to say that you know, Karlsson was shaky early in the series, and probably not only because he's still working through that injury, but also because he hadn't played very much with the team for a while. And yet still ended up with 9 points in that first round. I mean, the Sharks don't advance without those points. Yes, he, you know, had some defensive miscues, et cetera. But what do you expect when a guy had to sit out the last 30 games or whatever with that groin pull?
My concern with Carlson, especially in the beginning of the series, was he was coming in and I felt like he was trying a little too hard to make up for lost time. And one of the things that we've seen with the Sharks in the past, which has always been frustrating, is sometimes a team devolves into a bunch of guys that are trying to be individual heroes versus playing as a team. And we've seen how that backfires with them a lot. And I felt like, look, Erik Karlsson's skill level is undeniable. It's undeniable. But not only, you know, did he not have maybe enough playing time with the Lions for some of the stuff he was trying to pull, but I also felt like he was trying to do too much. And I think as we started to see him settle down a little bit later in the series, a lot of those really wonky high-risk passes, lack of awareness issues kind of, you know, fell to the wayside a bit. Not 100%.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because I certainly still saw any number of people on Twitter complaining about him not making the simple pass when he could, etc. I just don't
know.
Well,
he was definitely doing very high risk cross ice passes throughout the entire series.
Yeah. Well,
and that's obviously concerning, because, you know, considering how DeBoer has the defense basically pinching most of the time, because, you know, they all want to be forwards. When you do a pass like that, you're basically baiting a team to get an on-man rush the other way. And we saw that happen quite a few times.
Yeah. Well, not always just because of EK65 either.
Oh, of course.
Brent Burns has always had that, penchant for giving up the odd-man rush.
Yeah, for sure. I don't disagree with you.
Yeah.
So listen, I feel the same way you do, which is basically, I think, if I'm understanding correctly, that we still don't really know who this Sharks team is. There are moments where, and this is just like the regular season for me, there are moments where they're absolutely brilliant. Like for me, the O, when the O wants to be good, the O is good. It's scary good. And we saw that with that historic, power play comeback where basically Pavs goes down, he's injured. It's like divine intervention. The Sharks find the renewed purpose, and they go ape shit on the Golden Knights and come back and take the lead. Now, something that I do think is really important to note about that comeback, and I don't know if you'll agree here, Ben. I know Colin would. One of the criticisms that the Sharks have gotten, regardless of who's been on the team over the last, basically 15 years, 20 years maybe, is, that kind of idea that, well, there's not enough purpose or heart or drive or whatever. And I think, there were points in this series, especially in the middle of the series, where they were kind of sucking, where that narrative started to really affect me and sink in. But then, look, Pavs going down is a horrible situation. It's a horrible situation. That being said, the way that the team rallied around them, not just in the goals, but watching, I think it was Kane, Burns, and Jumbo carry him off and cradle him. Like when they came out after that, forget the fact that Joe basically said, we need to get 3 goals now for Pavs. You could see it in the team basically rising up against that adversity immediately.
Yeah, that was certainly a positive. I think I would also want to say that I don't think the Sharks did that all without the help of Vegas essentially falling absolutely apart on that power play. I think that, granted the emotions we saw from that group after the game and how they clearly felt about the penalty that was called, I think that you can say that that penalty fired up the Sharks, yes, but also deflated Vegas.
Yeah.
I mean, and, the thing about that whole narrative is if they stop even one of those goals, then this game probably is very different. The game, it's kind of historic.
Maybe. We don't know.
You never know. It's historic to give up 4 goals in a 5-minute span like that. Literally historic.
Yeah.
I think that actually maybe the most disconcerting thing about this, and I'm trying to find the tweet that I retweeted about this, but it's kind of disturbing to find out that the Sharks offense is powered by blood.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to disagree there, but I will say that, I would have hoped that, going for the cup would be enough motivation. I would have hoped that doing it for Jumbo would have at least been enough secondary motivation. But when the team was really struggling in the middle there, it was very frustrating to see them come out flat in games. And they did come out flat.
No, I don't think they came out flat in game 7.
I'm not saying game 7. I'm saying in the middle of that series.
Sure.
Like there were moments where I was looking at DeBoer and I was like, dude, how is this team not showing up ready to play? Mm-hmm. Because they were getting scored on so early, which was a problem that they had in the regular season as well. And in fact, I think it was game 4 where they were basically getting scored in the first 2 minutes of every period. Yeah, like that to me is like, are you guys not motivated to be here? I don't really understand what's going on. And I hate talking about motivation because we're not in the locker room, and I know that professional athletes are very motivated. But I will say that right now, and this is one of the maybe unfortunate but encouraging things, is that that Pav's going down, the team's reaction to it, and Ben, I guess this is where we're probably going to disagree a little bit about momentum. I think one of the things that did was it gave the Sharks renewed purpose, which they which then blossomed forward, other than the weird, you know, the goal at the end, which Jones absolutely needed to save. Right. Which again, we're talking about Jones. All the good he did, that was a really bad goal.
Yeah, it was. Short side.
Yeah, so we don't really know which Jones we're getting still.
Well,
here's the thing is that, like, not only do they have a renewed sense of confidence now based off of what they just accomplished, but I feel like they have something really powerful to rally around, because Pavs, this is a slightly different situation, I would argue, than Jumbo, because for Jumbo, it's like, dude, he's done so much for us, we need to get him a cup, and I get it. But Pav's play and Pav's sacrifice in that series, particularly in the first game, was pretty immense. You know, obviously losing his teeth. No offense, Couture, you did too. We appreciate it. I think that was a huge part of why the Sharks really, you can tell they took it personally, whether they should have or shouldn't have. And right. My hope is that that intensity and that drive and that desire to, you know, we don't know how long Pavs is going to be out. We don't really know what's going on. I would argue the fact they haven't told us might actually not be as bad a sign as people think, because if he was done for the season, we would, you know, you'd hear that pretty quick. Or maybe not. But hopefully that added purpose is enough for him. And I really felt like for the first time I saw the Sharks openly and directly respond to something.
I mean, look, that's how the narrative turned out.
Of course.
Right. And it's a beautiful narrative for Sharks fans, right? It's an inspiring narrative for Sharks fans, that, you know, that story of Jumbo saying, go get three fucking goals right now. You know, Logan gets that first goal 6 seconds into the 5-minute power play. And I think that this is something that one of our commenters, Abraham D, said in chat. He said that was really the moment, that they deflated, and I totally agree with that. Actually, in retrospect, that it wasn't the power play itself completely, but giving up the Couture's snipe that quickly put them on their heels, and they didn't recover. Yeah. It, at least until they, you know, they went, with the empty net and even things up on that that unfortunate goal. But I don't know that I don't think that game, as great as it was, and it is. I mean, we're going to be talking about that game, I think, for a long, long time, particularly if the Sharks do get their shit together and keep moving forward. That game is one of those ones where you'll never forget it. Right.
Yeah.
But if the Sharks get swept by the Avs, and the Avs are dangerous, it could happen. If Jones doesn't show up, if the team can't maintain that edge, we're going to be just as sad a week from now as we potentially were going to be, you know, 4 days ago.
Let's talk about this. Yeah. Because, you know, obviously now we're focused on the Avalanche. Now, the weird thing about the first round of these playoffs was there was a chance there where it looked like the bottom seeds were all going to be the ones to advance. There were a lot of crazy upsets. Now, some of the upsets, yeah, I think if you look at, I think we're somewhat logical in hindsight, right? So for example, Tampa Bay and Columbus, right? Tortorella basically identified exactly what Tampa Bay's was doing, their strength, which is basically, outside of the power play, obviously, was basically really speedy neutral zone transitions. And he was smart enough to figure out how to clog that. And the second he clogged that...
Lucky enough.
Yeah. But, you know, their game started to fall apart. But then there are a lot of other series where I watch and I still scratch my head a little bit. Like, for example... I'm still struggling to understand the Hurricanes Capitals, which I watched every game of. I am still struggling to understand to a degree Nashville Dallas. And I think the other series that you know really got me was obviously the one that forces our next matchup, which was Calgary and Avalanche. Now I would take this, and I think you would too, Ben. The thing with the Avalanche, as opposed to maybe the Vegas Golden Knights, the Avalanche are kind of riding high, it seems, on one line and a goalie heating up at the right time. And obviously, look, a goalie.
So is Columbus, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. But I feel like from a strategic standpoint, Columbus basically figured out and exploited Tampa Bay's one weakness, and it did it insanely efficiently. Like, I don't think they could do it again if they had another seven games, personally. But with the Avalanche, it's a different story. So here's a question that's come up in our Discord. What do you see as happening here? Because look, it's very obvious that the Sharks are banged up. We don't know all their injuries. We can guess what some of them are. But they obviously look pretty banged up and run down, despite their flashes of brilliance. Their goaltending, despite getting slightly better, is still overall, I would argue, spotty. Again, that last goal in the third period being a prime example of that. And their coaching and their line management is crazy. But at the same time, they are a very deep roster. Now, the Avs being the opposite, right? Not as deep a roster. Definitely not as skilled across the board. Not all four lines. Probably not really beyond one line. But they do have hot goaltending. So in your mind, who does the advantage go to at this point?
I don't know. Because I don't know how healthy the Sharks are. Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know what stupid lineup decisions DeBoer is going to make, because he's prone to make stupid lineup decisions when he's given too much time to think about them.
Yeah.
And we could see Michael Haley draw back in for no reason, except that DeBoer, for whatever reason, likes having, you know, the teacher's pet around to throw out there for 5 minutes a night.
And boy, I was legitimately concerned that he might come back in game seven.
I can understand that concern. I suspect that DeBoer saw in game 5 and 6 the value of specifically skilled depth against Vegas and decided to stick with it. But I don't know what he will see as being the advantage of talent versus grit intensity. In this lineup. And also, the Sharks don't need as much of a talent advantage against the Avs as they did against Vegas, because I think Vegas was legitimately one of the three or four teams that had a shot at the Stanley Cup if best team wins, right? And having said that, I thought the Sharks would beat Vegas because I didn't think Fleury was going to be all world this time. And he was beatable in enough games that the Sharks managed to pull it out, right? That said, I think the Sharks should try to play their best players, because I always think that, regardless of who they're matched up against, because the Sharks can win games on depth, and they need guys like Goodrow and Carlson to actually contribute offensively, and they simply cannot with Haley on their line.
Right.
That said, DeBoer also has to trust them for more than 5 minutes a night. And it's only because the Sharks got to OT that Barkley Goodrow's fresh legs paid off. Right.
Yeah.
It's only that Dylan apparently got hurt that Joakim Ryan came off the bench and looked so good in the late third period and OT. And by the way, Joakim Ryan looked fantastic.
And we had seen Ryan basically ride the bench earlier.
Yo, the whole series.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. DeBoer was playing five guys and not getting burned.
Five guys in three lines, which, by the way, is a great way to exhaust your player. So
that's the thing, right?
One of the explanations for their flat start. Could be
they're exhausted.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that game six, they looked so flat. It could be they're exhausted. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't bode well against a super fast team like Colorado. And that's why I say, like, there is a very real scenario in which Colorado comes in and just sweeps the Sharks, because they're not stupid enough to only play three lines, nine forwards, five defensemen. At least as far as I can tell. Now, one of the other teams that I thought was a true threat to get to the cup was Calgary. So I'm glad to see them gone.
Yeah.
Because I think if the Sharks aren't dead on skates, they can beat Colorado 9 times out of 10. Now, you know, you talked about the crazy matchups and the crazy, you know, series victories that kind of have defined the first round of these playoffs. And that's hockey, man.
Yeah.
Like the hockey is very, very luck-based. You know, there's some folks who've been doing sort of studies of how likely is the best team to win a series, or how many games long would a series need to be in the various playoffs where the best team would advance.
Yeah.
Like 99% of the time. And I think it's something like 11 games in baseball. It's 51 in the NHL.
Well, that's part of the argument against parity, right? For the people who are not for parity, right? The NHL's level of parity. Mm-hmm. I think Sean McIndo, you know, Down Goes Brown, had a fantastic opening to one of his articles on The Athletic about this, where he basically said, look, there's two doors when it comes to this parity thing. Door number one says that you want to believe the playoffs determine who the real best team is. right? There are fakers. There are teams you think are the best, but are not. Door number two, which is the one where everything just seems like a coin flip. You acknowledge that the playoffs are entertaining, but that's it. And I think, you know, I understand that argument. I get it. I totally get it. I still find them entertaining.
You know, and there's an argument to be made, and this is, again, a comment building on a comment that was made in chat by Abraham, is that, you know, this is good for probably hockey in the long run.
Yeah.
To see this sort of upsets and to see a team like Columbus finally advance, to see a team like Carolina finally advance, to see the Islanders gritensity their way to a victory over the fucking Pens, good riddance Pens, to see the Avs, an exciting young team, you know, advance. And to see Dallas beat Nashville, though, I feel for Nashville fans because, you know, you kind of felt like this was, again, supposed to be their year, just like last year was. That said, all of these, you know, circumstances mean that if the Sharks can get some bounces and play structured and play the right guys, I mean, it's open.
Oh, yeah. Well,
open for the Sharks.
Listen, speaking of luck, I just to hop back to game seven. My feeling watching that game was Vegas's defense did an awesome job of getting their sticks on the ice and blocking a lot of passes. It took me a while to figure out why the Sharks can connect the pass. But at the same time, it was very hard emotionally not to feel like the Sharks just had zero luck and couldn't get it in.
But I think that also was true. And again, this is a very luck focused game. The bounces in game seven. And the referee calls until the last 10 minutes went against the Sharks.
Yeah.
That Eakin goal should not have counted, period.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
That's bullshit. The Sharks had already lost a game because the refs were bad.
Yeah.
And this is why ultimately, it's probably time for us to address the
controversy. I was going to skip it. I don't want to feed it.
Were you?
Yeah.
This is why I don't give a fuck.
Well, I don't give a fuck
about the controversy is because the Sharks should have won this series in six games. Game two was theirs, and a referee call turned it the wrong way. So guess what, Vegas? You just got to join the big boy hockey club and see what happens in the playoffs when you do dumb shit and let the refs control the narrative.
Yeah.
And interject them into it.
Well, that's why like a couple people have asked me if I've watched, you know, Marcia Salt's reaction. And my feeling is no, and I don't really care to because quite frankly, I don't see how you can be up in arms about if you believe that call was a blown call. And I don't really believe it was a blown call, but I don't believe it should have been called exactly the way it was called. But the fact of the matter is, it's very odd to take the stance of that blown call changed the series, but I'm perfectly fine with the other blown call.
Well, of course he's fine with it because
of course. Well, and that's,
because they're a bunch of fucking hypocrites.
Listen, that's the one thing that I want to point out about the narrative regarding that call, because I really don't want to go too deep into it. I think it's been covered already, is this. If you read articles and you're feeling frustrated because all these fans of other teams are going, well, it definitely wasn't a penalty or it was a minor or whatever, just take solace in the fact that I guarantee you that if it was their player and their team, they would feel radically different about that.
You could also turn it on its head and say the only reason we feel it was called correctly is because we're Sharks fans. And I don't know that either you or I agree that it was called completely correctly.
Correct.
But at the end of the day, it doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah.
When you in the NHL are dumb enough to put the outcome of the game in the hands of the refs, it's your fault.
And I'm not saying that it happens with this play in particular, but and to have different standards. Like, my actual one hope out of this is with all the outrage that comes from it, warranted or not, is that the NHL finally steps back. Because this was not the only series. I mean, it seems like the narrative is getting ratcheted up even more, not just because of this game, across the board. Because, there were some things in the Bruins Maple Leafs games where I was like, hold on a second, man. Guys are getting killed out here.
Yep.
This is not sustainable. So my one hope out of it, if you are outraged by it, is that too bad. But and by the way, Vegas, welcome to the NHL. The Sharks have lost plenty of series on bullshit calls. But my hope is that the NHL does start looking at this and does go, look, we got to stop having two different ways to officiate. Period. Right.
Yeah, no, I mean, but they're not. They're not going to. This has been an issue for years, and it's not going to happen. And ultimately, what it comes down to, there's two penalties they call reliably in the playoffs. The one is if you slash a stick out of somebody's hand or you break their stick, they're going to call that slashing call. If you launch the puck over the glass and it's clear enough that it wasn't, you know, touched by somebody else or hit the glass, they're going to call it automatically. Everything else is up for grabs. And, you know, what we did see in the first round is like some series, the refs actually called a lot of penalties. And the Sharks, by the way, they got a lot of penalty calls. The power play didn't show up for the first few games, but they had opportunities that they didn't capitalize on. And if the Sharks had lost the series, we'd be talking about that. Yeah. We'd be talking about how the power play didn't show up, except it did in game seven.
Right.
Right. But then there's a series like, you know, Toronto and the Bruins, like you say, where they literally swallowed their whistle. Now, I'm not saying that every penalty that occurred in the Sharks series was called. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is they certainly called more than you typically see in a playoff series. There was another series where that was true too, and I can't remember which one it was. And you know, the Sharks got, again, go back and look. The Sharks had plenty of power play opportunities. They were what, like 3-for-22 or something like that? 5-for-24 until game seven. And even in game seven, they didn't capitalize until, you know, Coach Scherr got pissed off about them killing Pavs, and off we go. So,
yeah. Well, listen,
you know,
before we get to our predictions.
Yep.
Because we do got to start wrapping this up. I want to talk about real quick our predictions with the other series. Now, I will say I am actually disappointed about the result. I'm conflictedly disappointed. That's not a word, but disappointed with one of the series. And that would actually be the series that ended tonight, the Hurricanes and Capitals. Not because I necessarily wanted I love watching the Hurricanes upset the Capitals. At the same time, boy, that narrative going into that round, if it were Barry Trotz against his former team that basically shunned him. Oh, that would have been a great one. Islanders Capitals.
I like the narrative here that is there instead, because you've got possession darlings, basically Sharks East, right? Have the puck, shoot the puck, don't score.
Yeah.
Versus Gretensity on a grand scale.
Yeah. And fuck Don Cherry. Right? Because that's what Carolina basically is. That's what their existence is.
They're a bunch of jerks.
They're a bunch of jerks. Who do you see advancing out of that series?
I hate to say it, but I think the Isles do.
Yeah, me too.
Because I don't hate to say it.
I like Barry Trotz.
I mean, I like Barry Trotz a lot too. I hate to see it because it's a slower, less fun brand of hockey than what Carolina brings. But Carolina
it also flips off John Tavares. It's like
true. And by the way, John Tavares, go fuck yourself.
And it's a middle finger to a degree to Brooklyn, right? Because they're going nuts when the games are played up in Nassau.
Yeah. So I think the Isles pull it out because I just think Carolina needs everything to go right to beat that style of play, and they won't. Sad trombone.
Yeah. All right.
You want to talk about the others?
Bruins, Columbus. Oh, sorry. I should throw mine out. Yeah, I think it's Islanders. Sorry.
Yeah, that's fine.
This is great. Bruins, Columbus.
Yeah.
Now, I know the Bruins were your other team, right?
Yeah, they're my team for Columbus. I think they're going to make the final, and I don't think the matchup matters.
Copy. Well, that means that he thinks it'd be the Bruins. I don't really disagree. I'm waiting for the Tortorella meltdown to occur. I will say in the last round, it was hilarious when Columbus would come back or score, seeing the "are you fucking kidding me" face on their coach. The camera kept coming back and he kept looking up like, no way, really? So I thought that was great, but I agree with you, Bruins. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Stars Blues. I'm going to go first on this one, Ben.
That's fine, because people should know what my pick is.
Right. Well, my pick's not different from your pick.
Okay.
I think the Blues are the better team.
Yeah.
But I will say that right now, Dallas is one of those teams I don't understand. I don't understand it. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I definitely think from a logical perspective, it should be the Blues. And I will qualify with that because if you use logic in the first round, you lost almost every round.
Yeah, I mean, I've only got three teams left among my picks, so
understandable. Yeah. And you think?
Yeah, so I picked the Blues for the same reason. I think the Blues are a more complete team with a hot goalie, whereas Dallas is one line, kind of like the Avs, one line and a hot goalie, which is all you really need to win a series. But you kind of need more than that, I think, to get all the way to the cup. So
you'd hope so. All right, the big question, Ben. Sharks and Avs. Who you got?
I mean, I have the Sharks. I have the Sharks in seven.
Sharks in seven.
Yeah. And I think the Sharks just squeak by on overall, like, depth, right? Mm-hmm. We don't know if or when Pavs will play again. So we may be down a center. And you know, I don't think Pavs has been particularly healthy since he took the tooth breaker. So I don't know how much that really hurts them in this matchup, and I'd rather if Pavs was really out on the ice. I mean, that's a traumatic brain injury. You know, when you get knocked out, it's not like you see in the movies where you come to and you're like ready to go. So I hope that the medical staff holds firm with him if he really was out, and we don't see him in the second round, honestly, because he's going to need to heal.
Yeah.
That said, the Sharks have plenty of depth to overcome this. We don't know the status of Donskoy or why he didn't play in game seven. And I suspect it was that Braden McNabb hit rang his bell.
Yeah, I agree.
And, the upside there was that Radil played rather than Haley in game seven. DeBoer's already said he's looking at some lineup changes for the next series, which does imply either through health or what have you, there's going to be some folks on the ice that we haven't seen in a while. And I think the only obvious candidate for that is Haley, bummer.
Yeah, I think it's the Sharks as well. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I'm using logic here again, and I'm hesitant to do so because I feel like logic is pointless, especially with this level of parity in the NHL right now, in the playoffs, especially with officiating being a complete X factor. I do feel like the Sharks, as Hurdle said about Sharks over Vegas Golden Knights, are the better team. I don't know how injured that depth is, but I feel like given the scenario with the skill level of the Avalanche, that if it's an endurance match, from a logical perspective, the Sharks should advance. I don't necessarily think it's seven. I think actually the Sharks win in fewer, maybe.
Say? I mean, it depends on
plays. Yeah, I mean, we're just throwing out numbers. But here's the other thing too is, to touch on what we talked about earlier, we also don't know what Sharks are showing up here. Right. I would like to think that with the way the Sharks finished Game Seven, that they would start strong, and I do believe that they actually will start strong. But again, that last round, as much craziness and fun and emotion as it was, they were Jekyll and Hyde. There was very little middle. So what we need to see from the Sharks to advance and to go to the cup is consistency. That's a big thing.
The most encouraging thing there, I think, from my perspective, was that, you know, we've been worried that Timo Meier has a broken wrist. And he played probably his best game in game seven.
Yeah, although his shots were a little off the net.
Well,
right? A broken wrist.
I don't know that you... Timo's never been the best shooter, A. B, you know, Vegas sticks. C, bounces, bad ice. It was hot in San Jose. I don't know. But, he was extraordinary in game seven. And if he plays like that, some of those pucks are going to go in. And the Sharks will need him to do that. So that was encouraging. Hurdle was a monster the whole series. Couture was better in the back half of the series than the front. Vlasic was great when he came back from injury. I mean, I think there's a lot of things. I mean, Carlson, I think, played better, in the back half of the series than he did in the front half. And so I think, you know, if this is a trend, if the Sharks are getting a little bit put together, and I there was still a lot of hitting in the back half of the series, but I certainly felt like the emphasis on it fell off. I felt like Vegas slowed down themselves, and aside from McNabb, were hitting less in the back half of the series. And I don't know if that's because, you know, they got ground down by their own hitting, which is a thing that happens. or you know, they just decided to focus on the actual outcomes when they didn't win game five, you know. So anyway, I guess it's a long way of saying, I think there are encouraging signs for the Sharks, both on the offense and defensive side, and not just in the crease, and maybe they will win in five. I feel like Jones just has to show up poorly in the first few minutes of the game for so much to go horribly wrong again.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't disagree. The good Sharks are great. The bad Sharks are bad. I mean, I know that sounds rudimentary, but that's kind of how it is. And it's pretty easy to tell which team you're getting pretty quick, which and actually is kind of the nice thing.
And yeah, it's true. But it's bizarre that, you know, the coaching staff hasn't figured out kind of how to set them on the rails in the right direction and point them and say, that's how you do it.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
do that. Do that, yeah, idiots.
That's one of my primary concerns.
Yeah.
Ben, three stars of the round.
Oh, boy. All right. So I think that my third star for the round is going to be Pavs's jaw.
Okay.
I think my second star for the round is going to be Kocher's face and teeth. And my first star for the round is going to be, I think, Tomas Hertl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, listen, I don't disagree with you at all. My third star, I think I'm gonna give my third star to actually LeBanc. And I know maybe a little bit because of the last game, but in general, and I've, you know, if you listen to this podcast, you know, I've always liked LeBanc's game, but
yep.
I thought LeBanc, especially in game seven, really, really stepped it up. My second star is, there's a lot of guys that can get it. Like, I think Couture definitely deserves a star, but in my mind, when I watched the Sharks through this series, there were two players that gave me the most hope, and they're my one and two stars. Not just for the present, but for the future. And that was Timo Meier, which I'm going to give my second star to,
yep.
And Tomas Hertl for my first star. Because when you look at those three players in general, it gives me confidence that the Sharks are going to be all right despite their terrible contracts. Because those are three guys that I think not only have majorly stepped up this year,
yep.
But especially in these playoff series. And when you look at the team, if you're just going by eyeballs, take stats out of the equation for 1 second, just using your eyes. The three guys that consistently had the most pop in their game, I felt, were those three guys.
Yeah, and it is fair to say that, you know, overlooking LeBanc, given the 4 points he had in the power play in game seven, which were key, 3 assists, 1 goal, and the goal was the go-ahead goal. You know, LeBanc deserves a lot of credit for that. And he was a guy that people wanted to trade at the trade deadline. And, of course, here on this podcast, we thought that was the dumbest fucking thing you could possibly do.
Yeah.
But
I think the only logic that I understand with that call, the people who were calling for him to be traded because they didn't like his game, that was stupid to me. Given where the Sharks were at the trade deadline, I could understand the logic of he's a player that you could trade that you would get value for. Mm. But even then, I don't think that would have been the right.
It wasn't the right call because the Sharks need, I mean, granted, you know, LeBanc is going to be heading into an actual contract sooner or later. You know, you need guys where you've got some cost control on a team where you're spending $8 million a year on, you know, Vlasic, right. Burns, other guys. When you're spending seven and a half on Kane, who, by the way, Kane is a guy we need to see a whole lot more of in the Avs series, and not the negative parts of Kane that we saw in the first few games.
Yeah, I agree.
Because they need him to show up. You know, it was good that instead it was Timo and LeBanc and Hertl in this series, but they're going to need more from other guys going forward.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Listen, folks, that concludes the first round of the playoffs. Woo! We'll be back for the second round against the Avalanche. That actually starts on Friday night, and then pretty much every other night from there on out. Listen, you can check out our podcast on iTunes. You can check us out on Android platforms, Android people. The joke's getting old, but I'm just going to keep running into the ground. We don't know how to do it. We're not going to look it up. Check us out on Twitter at Strickland the Cup. Check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/Strickland the Cup. You can check us out on the web at strickland the cup.com. And now you can check us out on Discord. And I'm not going to give you a link because I haven't set up a permanent link. I apologize. if you follow our Twitter, you follow our Facebook, you'll see links pop up occasionally. We will try to put a permanent link up there in the next couple of days. That is a pretty active chat. So it is a really good opportunity for you to talk to us in real time. Some of that stuff does make the podcast, as you've seen tonight.
Yep.
And in general, if you hit us up on any one of those outlets, we're always happy to talk about things on air. Some of the stuff, again, we talked about, we were already going to talk about tonight, I think, but listeners brought up, and I'm glad we were able to cover off on them. So we do appreciate you listening. We do take those questions seriously, and we do try to address them as much as possible. And the nice thing about the Discord chat, I will add, not that you don't already do it on Facebook, Ben, or Twitter, because that's where we're more active. You're more active, I would say, is even if it doesn't make the air, we still make an effort to talk about it.
Yep.
So that's something to check out.
One more player who needs to show up in the second round, who gets a tremendous amount of minutes, despite the fact he plays a style of game you'd think that DeBoer would hate, is Gustav Nyquist.
Yeah, I like Nyquist's game overall.
I don't hate it. Sure. I'm shocked.
DeBoer, I just needed to put goals in the net.
Yeah, I agree. That's the thing. He needs to score pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that concludes our podcast for round one.
Night night.
I know, Ben. You know what to do. Say bye-bye.
What's the hashtag for killing the Avs? Anybody know it?
Crickets, Ben.
Yeah.
Great sad radio. Sad. Right there. Great radio.
See you all on Discord.
Bye-bye.